Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 343 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies, TV shows, and all kinds of fun stuff all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Johnny Five, the human robot. J-Man, what's going on?
Hello, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How's the new year treating you so far?
It's a lot like the last year. I feel a little... I have to write a different number now, but it seems like that's all that's really changed.
That's kind of how life is, isn't it?
Kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, it's just number go up is all it is. Kind of like the stock market. And also, Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad, Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year to you, too. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you? What's going on?
I'm very excited to record what may be perhaps the most unlistenable episode of Christmas Creeps ever committed to digital.
Oh, absolutely, because as we round the corner here, as we start our 10th season of this show...
Good Lord.
We have decided to do something fun for ourselves, and we're going to celebrate by talking about our favorite thing in the world besides Christmas movies, and that is, you guessed it, video games. Tonight's episode is all about the video games that we played in 2023. And if that's not something you want to listen to, I understand. We'll be back next time with a movie or a TV show or something. But for now, video game chat.
For now, we're going to do us.
We're going to do us. It's still it's the tail end of the holiday season. We're still basking in the warm glow of just doing absolutely nothing. And you know what? Let's talk about some video games, friends. How does that sound?
We are worth it.
We are worth it. Tis the season for being a worthless piece of shit and playing video games. Am I right?
Here.
I mean, if you are fine with copy episode 2, but draw the line at video game episode, then, like, I don't know, may you live an interesting life, I guess.
May you live in interesting times. Yes, indeed. So, you know, crack one open.
Yes.
You got it.
Can check.
I don't have a can tonight.
Drink check.
I got a bottle.
Drink check.
I got a Breckenridge Brewery Christmas Ale. I am trying to get rid of my Christmas beers as fast as possible.
I bought some on clearance. they were normally $15 for four, and they were $4 for four. I was like, yes, thank you very much. But I have my last one. And as I was getting it out of the fridge, I dropped it onto the garage floor and almost had an aneurysm because I thought it was going to bust open.
Oh,
and
no.
I wasn't going to have a Christmas beer. Thankfully, she survived. This is a Hardywood Gingerbread Stout. I think I've had this on the show a couple of times.
I've heard of that, yeah.
It is a steadfast and true friend for the Christmas season. It's very good. Johnny Five, what you working with?
I have a bucket, because it comes in buckets when you buy it, of gamer piss. The second drink made from real piss.
The second, what's the first?
The first is just piss.
I thought so. I just wanted to make sure.
Did you guys hear, you guys know about the gamer girl bathwater thing, right?
Yes, I'm familiar.
Did you hear the latest development? I think it's the same person. She's selling a beer made with yeast taken from a pest.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. No. No.
It's super gross. I mean, it's still yeast. It's just yeast. It's whatever. But it's like, come on, come on now, get a new bit, please.
You only said that because you knew I would look it up, and now I have to put it in the show notes for everybody else to see.
My curse has become yours. I will say, I think somebody else posted about it in our Discord, and that's how I learned about it. I think Goob posted about it.
Maybe so. And if you need a recommendation to join our Discord, there you have it, folks.
Or a stern warning against joining our Discords.
The link for that is in our show notes. Do with that what you will.
So let's hear it for the games. Let's
hear it for games, everybody. You know, I think the three of us are in agreement that, you know, one of the most fun things about Christmas is that you get to ask for video games for Christmas.
Yes.
And this was going to be our Christmas Day episode where we talked about, you know, our favorite games and whatnot. But did anybody get any video games for Christmas?
I think this is the first year. I think this is the first year since I started getting video games that I actually didn't get any. Of course, I didn't ask for any, but
I was going to say, is that by design or is that just sort of a marker of the times?
It's not a marker of. It's more that I'm trying to. It's twofold. A, I'm an adult and I have disposable income to spend on a game when I want to play a game. And B,
true.
I was trying to cut back already this year and like only buy games that I knew I was actually going to get around to playing.
Fair enough, yeah.
Or receive as a gift, if you will. So it just kind of ended up that way.
Mm-hmm.
What about you all? I did get game adjacent stuff, though. I got books about games, which I wanted.
Oh, that's still cool.
I got Jeremy Parrish's SG-1000 Works and NES Works 1987. Highly recommended. If you've never seen the Video Works series, check it out. It's pretty cool game history.
I do love Video Works. I think you share that with me quite a lot. I do enjoy it.
Yes. It's
the closest to that you'll get to like an actual video game, like encyclopedia, without actually writing an encyclopedia.
Yes.
I see my thing with video games at Christmas nowadays is like my family always asks us to write Christmas lists, and like I don't know what to put on a Christmas list anymore. Household objects, clothes. I'm an adult now, and like you, I'll buy what I want unless somebody says, like my brother or, you know, a cousin will say, like, well, we know you play video games, just what kind of games do you want? So I always ask for like AAA games, stuff that's easy to find, because, you know, some people just don't know where to shop for video games anymore. So, right. You know, I got the new Star Wars, was it the Jedi Survivor that came out this year? Mm-hmm. Haven't gotten to dip into it yet, but I'm looking forward to that. That's about it for me. J-Man, what about you? Games?
Yeah, games. Chance of Sinar, I'm pretty sure that came out this year. We played it last month. That is an extremely fucking good game. It was sold to me on a, hey, you like the Obra Dinn? And that sales pitch worked. I'll say that.
I just want to point out that you did say sales piss, and I appreciate that.
Sales piss.
Exactly. This gamer piss is going to my head, I tell you.
I had another game recommended to me in the same vein where it's, hey, did you enjoy Obra Dinn? Well, how about this flavor? Case of the Golden Idol. Have you
yes,
played that?
I did
I've heard
not,
of that.
We were looking at it, but just in terms of none of the sales went down to the impulse price level for me, basically.
Gotcha. I've heard good things. I actually grabbed it on the Steam sale, but I haven't gotten to it yet. But Chance of Sinar, I've heard good things from you. I will check it out. But
yes.
I'm going to try to get through Golden Idol first and some other things, which I'll talk about in a moment first.
So what we've done tonight, folks, is we have kind of all agreed that we're going to present our top five games of the year. I think we've all played at least five video games this year, right?
Maybe? Yeah. Yes. And unlike most top game of the year things, we're playing by a slightly different set of rules, which I think is nicer. And that is, it was a certain dead forum that some of us may or may not have frequented in the past. This is the rule set that they use. It doesn't have to have come out in the year 2023. You just had to have played it in 2023.
Right. So, which is great for me because it opens me up to actually like being able to talk about the games I did play versus, well, I'd only played two or three new releases this
exactly.
year.
Exactly.
So there you have it.
And for John, Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn, did not come out in 2023. So that frees him up for it. That frees him up to for his number one game, I'm sure. Or maybe it's not his number one game. Stay tuned to find out.
Yeah, not to spoil anything ahead of time. But hopefully we've all got five to talk about. So who would... I guess we're all going to just kind of round robin it until we get down to one. Is that how you want to do this? I'm going to let Jonathan start this off because we don't usually get to hear from him these days.
Hear, hear.
All right. Well, I'm going to just repeat what I just said and highly recommend Chance of Sinnar, which I'm pretty sure came out this year because I saw some... different streamers playing it. I think Secret Sleepover Society playing it was what introduced me to it, but then hearing about it and looking into it, it was pretty much sold to me as like, hey, it's Obra Dinn, but with language. And that's pretty much what it is. It's a like a isometric point-and-clicky adventure game where you're in basically the Tower of Babel, more or less.
Okay.
And each level is populated by a different civilization who has their own language that you cannot decipher at all because you don't speak the language. And they're all, like, pictographic languages that use different symbols, different grammar rules, things like that. So it's presented kind of like Obra Dinn, which I guess I need to explain what Obra Dinn is, don't I?
You need to explain it to me, because I know the name, but I don't exactly know what it is.
Return of the Obra Dinn is a game by the Papers, Please guy Lucas Pope that came out in, I want to say, 2018, where you play an insurance adjuster. Now wait, get back here, sit down. You play a insurance agent in, like, the year, like, 1802, who has been assigned to figure out what the hell happened on a ghost ship that has floated back towards shore, basically.
Okay.
And because it's a video game, you have a magic pocket watch that lets you, like, rewind and freeze frame time to the moment of somebody's death if you find their remains. So okay. Your goal is, it's basically a gigantic logic problem. You have 60 people on the boat. Your goal is to figure out who's who, how they died, and in what manner, basically.
Okay, like, I gotcha.
Like, you find a corpse, like, whose corpse is this? How did they die? Etc. Like that.
And it's lots of little, like, context clues and stuff you have to pick up on. It's a really cool game. Highly recommend it if you haven't.
Yeah, you'll get to the end and you're trying to identify different Chinese topmen based on which shoes they're wearing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it gets deep into the deduction weeds. Chance of Sinnar, you pick up a lot of pictographic language through context, and then like because there are multiple civilizations, you kind of work back and forth a little bit to figure out. Well, I know what they're saying in this one, and try to translate that one. And overall, the game has a very pretty game as well, which definitely goes a long way. Sounds very good too. The soundtrack's great.
Now I heard there are stealth parts. As somebody who doesn't like stealth elements in games, is it that bad, or should I still play it?
It never does anything worse than take you back to the beginning of the room.
Okay.
And most of the time, what you needed to do was probably just sit for a few more seconds and watch the pattern that the dudes you're trying to hide from are walking in.
Gotcha. Okay.
I see.
Cool.
All right. Bradford, how about you?
All right.
What's your number five?
My number five is technically not a game that came out this year or last year, 2023, because it's still in early access. But it is a fully fleshed out game at this point. It's ridiculous the amount of stuff that's in this game. It's kind of the amount of stuff that's in this game rivals like Vampire Survivors, for example. But it's still in early access. This is The Void Reigns Upon Her Heart, and it is a bullet hell shooter. It is a side-scrolling bullet hell shooter, but it is done up a bit like a roguelike, where you start out a run with just your baseline powers, and then you'll choose, it's a boss rush, so you'll choose a boss, and then based on which boss you choose, there are certain rewards at the end of the stage that will, you know, power up your shot, power up your focus, give you more bombs, things like that. It's really great. It has a really great ramp up on the difficulty curve to where I would recommend it to somebody who doesn't even like bullet hell shooters.
Mm-hmm.
You can start out really easy and it really eases you in. But if you want to, you can really crank up the difficulty of your own volition. Kind of like heat levels in Hades, and it just really becomes a full-on like manic bullet hell shooter. It's got it's set in an alien world where there's like these alien creatures, and there's this one who's been discarded and unloved, and it's all about loving monsters. It's cute. It's got a cute, interesting world too going on. I would recommend it. Check it out. It might come out of early access this year, but the dev really gets into like scope creep a lot. I think they've been close to releasing it like twice and then decided, no, I want to pull a whole new mode in. So they've done that a couple of times. But it's got a lot of content, and a lot of it's locked behind achievements. So like if you get an achievement, you'll unlock a new item. Kind of like, I guess it's more like Binding of Isaac in that regard, where items that you'll see in a run are unlocked as you do more runs. But unlike Binding of Isaac, there aren't certain items to avoid, so hooray! check it out!
Yeah, is it just on, like, where are you playing that right now?
I am playing it on Steam, on Steam Deck.
Okay, so it's just on Steam right now?
It is just on PC right now.
PC.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they're eventually going to take it to other stuff. I would really like to see it get a Switch release. It feels made for Switch. It feels like a really good match for Switch, but I don't know if it'll actually make it there. But it's really good on Steam Deck. So
that's check it. Yeah, see, one of my things in recent years is I've kind of fallen off using like Steam and my PC as a gaming platform. And I realize now 4 of my 5 picks are all Switch releases. So make of that what you will.
I was in a similar boat until I got a Steam Deck. And even then, I still find myself playing the Switch more than the Steam Deck. But
right. It sounds fun, though. It sounds kind of like one of those the old school like shoot 'em ups that like Konami would put out, you know? Is that kind of what the vibe or no?
Yeah, it's so like if you think of Gradius, you're like partway there.
That's kind of what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
is it a Toho?
Yeah.
It's not a Toho. Toho is also bullet hell, but it's a lot more easygoing than Toho.
Well, okay, so my number 5, Brad just mentioned it a minute ago, is Vampire Survivors.
Hey.
So this has been a big year for me for like two very specific types of games. The immersive open world game that I can like get lost in for weeks at a time. More on that later. And also like the micro gaming experience that I can like jump in, play for 20 minutes, and then just go about my day. And Vampire Survivors is very much that latter one. But the thing is, like, I will still, once I lose a run in Vampire Survivors, I will immediately jump back in and go, I can do better. I can do a little bit better. I don't even know how to really describe it. It's a very addictive, like, kind of a roguelike, but also kind of like an incremental game.
It's
where,
yeah, dangerously so, I would say.
Like,
yeah.
Dangerously so, but also intentionally so. Where, you know, the longer you last against hordes of monsters and zombies and things like that, the more power-ups that you get that will help you fight longer and stay alive longer. And, you know, the whole thing is sort of couched in like Castlevania-esque like aesthetics, and the music is like almost straight out of Symphony of the Night. It's just, I just kind of love every little thing about this game, and it's so simple that I'm kind of shocked I'm not playing it right now, because I could probably be playing it and y'all wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, I've played it while recording before.
It's it's a great mid-meeting, these people won't shut up but I have to stay on game. It's funny you mention its addictive nature. Do you know, did you hear about the dev, what he did before he developed Vampire Survivors?
No.
He designed slot machines, my dude.
Why am I not surprised?
Like, not even just like the graphics, but like the actual mechanics behind slot machines and trying to make them as addictive as possible.
It's funny you say that, because like if you ask me, what's the one game that I play on my phone all the time? It's a slot machine sim.
Yeah, but I would say he's using his power for good here, because pricing is a steal for this game.
But yeah, Vampire Survivors is great. If you have a couple bucks to spare, go check it out.
Yeah, like base game and three expansions is like less than $10 probably.
It's a ridiculous value. And it's on mobile as well. And one more feather in the dev's cap is like he was shopping around to get somebody to port it to mobile, and like all the porting houses that he talked to were like, "Oh, we're going to make this free to play with monetization and like stuff like that," and he was like, "Nah." And
then, or they're like, "We already have our own clone of it that's been out for months."
Well, that too. That
yeah, because like you see ads for like free mobile games, and they're all like clones of Vampire Survivors.
Yeah,
it's kind of shocking, but yeah, I love it.
Good all right, we'll choice.
go back to J-Man. How about what else you got for us?
So this is something that may appeal to me and only to me, but my next one is The Book of Hours.
Ooh,
okay,
good choice.
Tell us about that.
One of my favorite genres of the game is basically fuck around in a puzzle mansion.
Uh-huh.
Games like Payne's Creek Killings, Gone Home, a lot of hidden object games for that matter as well. It's just fun to have like a believable space just to fiddle with shit in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the space I'm already in, because I'm not in a mansion filled with puzzles. I'm in a house filled with cats. And there's only one real puzzle here. It's what did the cat knock over? and I'm never happy to solve the puzzle either. Book of Hours is a little different than that, though. It still is about a mansion that you fuck around in. It's a it's made by Weather Factory, who also made one of the games I try the hardest to like, but the game does not like me back, Cultist Simulator.
Yeah.
Weather Factory, Book of Hours is in the same universe as Cultist Simulator. It shares a lot of elements. It's not really a story that follows either. And Book of Hours is basically like a vibe-based game. It might be the best way to put it. You play as a character who's been newly assigned as the librarian of Hush House, which is it's the kind of place that while it is in fact a library, usually books go in there to restrict access to them rather than to encourage access to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, again, in the same universe as Cultist Simulator. So it involves a lot of, like, esoteric cosmology bullshit in the game. You spend a lot of time in the game reading the various books that you come across the house. When you take over the house is in part of it is burned down, and part of it is also just cursed. So you end up spending a lot of time unlocking new rooms through various means and looking at the cool shit in them, and then reading the books and just taking in lore and just vibing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It has a similar engine to Cultist Simulator, where you have like stacks of cards that you're using to do stuff, right?
Yes. One of the big differences between that is Cultist Simulator really requires effective time management. The clock is always ticking. You need money to fund your activities, including just living, basically, in Cultist Simulator. Book of Hours is a lot... The way one of the loading screens of Book of Hours describes it is that Book of Hours is not a hard game unless you make it so yourself.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that was the main thing that put me off of Cultist Simulator as well, is just, like, the... having to deal with stacks of, like, money and health and things like that, and having to devote things to that. I'm sure some people like that, but I just kind of wanted to get like the meat of the weird stuff. And this sounds a lot more like that.
Yeah, you have basically four different categories of cards, more or less, and then you have inventory items that you find in and around the house. But other than that, you do have money that you use mainly to buy the services of townsfolk to help you do stuff. You have soul cards, which are kind of like health, but you don't, like, it's not really bad to run out of them, it's just inconvenient.
Okay.
And then lessons and skills, which are also what you use to read harder books, basically. It's hard to describe, but I very much recommend at least looking into it, and maybe watching a video or two of it if it sounds... If it very slow paced, very relaxed, but still very creepy atmosphere and vibe. It's not really a horror game. It's just, it takes place in like 1920s, 30s England. And that's just a very creepy time to live in.
I do like the design aesthetic of this game. It looks very inviting and relaxing, but then I can imagine everything you're talking about makes it just like the creep factor just seeps in.
Yeah, the back half of the house is a prison.
Oh, great.
Oh.
That was right, that was the most recent use of the house before you took over, was the fact that they're using it as a prison. Okay. Yeah, the house is itself a castle. It's had multiple uses over the years. It's been a monastery at some points, a castle, actually been a librarian, been a prison.
Okay.
So yeah, I do recommend it, even if I can't really explain too much why, because it's just, it really is a you know it when you see it type thing for me to an extent.
A mood, if you will.
Yes, right. Yes, it is a mood game.
Nice.
This is also one that's just on Steam right now?
Yes.
Or PC, I guess?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, this is one that I may go check out here soon. Cool. All right, Bradford, let's go around to you.
All right, so my number four is going to be Street Fighter VI.
Oh, boy.
It came out this summer. It came out a little bit after Tears of the Kingdom. We'll put a pin in that. And it kind of devoured my summer, honestly. I'm somebody who always admired fighting games and liked watching them and dabbled in them, but I could never get really into them. Mm-hmm. Other than one or two here and there that I, you know, would button mash at and just kind of do my best and could eke out a win here or there. But Street Fighter VI feels like the first time that I felt like I was actually in control of a fighting game. It's got some really good onboarding tools. It's got this mode called World Tour, which is essentially an extended tutorial, like a 15-hour long tutorial, which is an entire like sub game in itself, where you're like running around, doing missions, learning controls, things like that, learning different character styles and things like that. It's a neat little mode, but the real meat of it, they actually gave this one good netcode, which is nice. I did play 4 and 5 a little bit, and they were not particularly pleasant online experiences. But they
a Japanese game with good netcode? Damn.
Yeah. They basically, Guilty Gear Strive more or less forced their hand. Bless them. I didn't actually play Strive. I wanted to, but never got around to it. But then Street Fighter VI came out, and I do like Street Fighter as just sort of a thing, as a concept, as a platonic ideal, if you will.
Yeah, this one seems, they took great strides to make it accessible.
Yes.
More, like I say, for the last one I played, which was 4.
Yeah, 4 is a nightmare to pick up, like, cold.
Yeah, 4 was the last one that I've played. I haven't played 5 or 6, so...
I would recommend 6, especially because it also has what's called the modern control scheme, which is blessed by the devs. And, you know, usually to perform a Hadouken or a Shoryuken, you're going to have to do, you know, specific moves with the joystick and then press certain buttons to do that move. What modern does is it takes your damage output and it nerfs it slightly. I think it's like 20% less damage, but you can just press a button and pull a direction like down and X, and it will let you do a Shoryuken with just down and X.
Oh, now, wow. Grant, okay.
Yeah. It's really good for accessibility. It's really good for people that just play on a normal controller and don't want to play with a fight stick. Now, granted, I do have a joystick and I was playing Classic, but like all the training mode stuff, they just really went to the nines after how disappointing 5 was. Like, everything that you want to be in this version is in this version, and it's very friendly to newcomers. And there's a big player base, so you're never, if you play ranked, which is what I did for a long time in the summer, you actually end up in like really even matches, which is the best thing about a fighting game, is like fighting somebody who is probably a little better than you, but coming out on top, not just getting your getting wrecked constantly, or, you know, punching down on somebody constantly. You want that friction, and it's there with how big the player base and how nice all of these tools are. And I really like it.
Cool.
There's a lot of love put into the game, and the animation's great. Sorry. Go ahead.
See, that's what I like to hear, because like Street Fighter is a franchise that I have loved ever since I was a kid. Like getting a copy of Street Fighter 2 for Christmas for my Super Nintendo was like one of the best things ever. So I have very fond memories of this franchise, and I like that it's still kind of growing and building on itself and trying to be the best fighting game franchise it can be. And if my affinity for it has waned over the years, it's only because Mortal Kombat has kind of miraculously brought itself back to life too. which I can't really talk about because it's not on my list this year. Mortal Kombat 1 came out and I said, no, miss me with that.
That seems to be a common sentiment.
If I'm not mistaken, 6 has a pretty good character creator in it too, right?
It's pretty good. It's Monster Factory level character creator.
So I could maybe do what Capcom does not have the fucking courage to do and put Mike Hagger in a Street Fighter game.
It's funny you mention that, because he is all over the place, because the world tour part takes place in Metro City. So there's like a Mike Hagar statue in the big central park and stuff like that, and everybody talks about Mike Hagar. But no, he's not in this. But it could make a Mike Hagar.
It feels like something where I say sometimes about Square Enix as well, where there's a thing that's not happening or happening, and you're just like, why the fuck is it this way? And it feels like the answer is because somebody with some measure of authority said no or yes 20 years ago, and no one has bothered to question it since.
Yeah,
probably.
It's a devs be weird sort of thing.
I'm legit surprised that Hagar did not show up in Smash Brothers before he showed up in a Street Fighter. I guess there's still time.
There's still time.
It would have been incredibly funny to continue not having him be a playable in Street Fighter, but instead have him in Smash.
It would have been great.
People would be, the fans would be so mad. And the only reason to do anything in video games is to make the fans mad.
It's especially always baffling, because whenever I ask people, they're like, because Zangief is right there. It's like, I'm sorry, how many Shotos do you have, and you're complaining that you don't want another character who does wrestling?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Let's give him a pipe. I mean, Cody had a pipe, but come on. Let Hagar use a pipe and do wrestling stuff.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Oh my gosh.
Let him play Gatorade. All right.
Speaking of the off-brand version of a different character, my number four. See, my numbers 4 through 1 are all going to be like turbo normie shit, and I apologize for that.
No,
but that's
go off.
It's kind of my taste in video games right now. But my number 4 is Spider-Man Miles Morales, which I finally got around to playing this year. It came out in 2020. It's kind of like the offshoot, not quite DLC, but basically DLC packet for Insomniac Spider-Man game. And it is every bit as good, if not better. And it's, I guess they put it on PlayStation, like the PlayStation Network, collection, because Spider-Man 2 just came out. And I've not gotten a chance to jump into that yet. But I spent a big chunk of my summer playing Spider-Man Miles Morales. And I mean, I gotta say, like, the web-slinging is fun, you traverse the city, you know, as Spider-Man, jumping all over the place. It's doing that without doing any of the missions or story mode stuff is just an absolute blast. And, like, that's, like, the big win as far as I'm concerned with these games. But also, like, it's just really nice to see, like, people, how quickly, like, people have embraced Miles Morales as a character. Recently, in the last like what five, 10 years, however long he's been around,
since Spider-Verse, basically
since Spider-Verse, yeah. Like yeah. I didn't know much about him until the Spider-Verse movie, and you know he's a great character. He's a great addition to like the Spider-Man Marvel universe, and like it's just really cool to see him like a full fledged video game about him, and like the story element works. The plot is great. It's just everything I wanted out of a Spider-Man game, and so. Kind of worried that Spider-Man 2 is not going to live up to, you know, the DLC for the first one.
Right.
You know? Nice. But we'll see.
I've always meant to play a Spider-Man game, but I've never gotten around to it.
The Insomniac games are where it's at. Like, that's, you can't really get any better than that. Like, the fighting system is pretty robust, but if you just want to, like, mash buttons and beat people up, you can do that too. And the game does not really penalize you for playing it any direction, any one way, you know?
Cool.
It's good stuff. That's all I got to say about that one.
I'll have to add that to my list as well.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so back around to J-Man.
Brad got me Talos Principle, so I've been getting into that, which is a game I feel two separate ways on.
Ooh, do go on.
Which, the one way I feel is puzzles, yes, give me more, please.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. the other way I feel is, I wish there was a button to make my robot guy do the jerk-off motion. At all of the game's text, dialogue, and characters.
Oh, it is a game that is so up its own ass. I will give you that.
What is Talos Principle? Explain that to me real quick.
So, when you start Talos Principle, one of the first things you probably realize is that your character is actually the guy from iRobot that's not Will Smith.
Oh, the robot. Robot.
The robot. Yes, that's the robot.
The titular character from the film iRobot.
The character is indeed he robot. It's a weird looking robot-y dude, and you are running around what looks like some like Greek ruins, solving puzzles that involve lasers and things. Very, very video game puzzle type puzzle, if you know what I mean.
It's a first person puzzler.
Even though they're not the same type of puzzles, they get the same vibe as like solving puzzles in The Witness or Portal, things like that.
There you go.
Gotcha.
Then you start finding some like computer terminals around, and there's like a booming voice yelling at you from above, and just all this stuff, and gets a lot into like existentialism and shit and about like consciousness and everything like that. And one of my favorite things to do is to give contradictory responses to the robot in the game, and then when it tells me that I'm being contradictory, just tell it yes, so whatever. Like, it asked me about the nature of consciousness, and I said one thing, and then I disagreed with it when it asked me when it tried to clarify what I said, and then it told me it was contradictory, and I just said yes, so, which I thought was a nice touch that I could just be rude to a robot, which is very fun.
Yeah, you can more or less later in the game to just tell the AI to
overall, if you can not be completely put off by the philosophy, for lack of a better thing, if you can not be put off by that, it's perfectly wonderful in terms of puzzles to solve and secret shit. And it's made by Crow Team, so it's kind of janky in the same way Serious Sam was as well, but not too much so, but it leads to having a lot of the same goofy, similar secrets and stuff.
Yeah. Could kind of avoid the terminal, so long as you're not put off by the constant beeping.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things where I can't bring myself to, like, ignore the story in a game, so to speak. Yeah. So I end up kind of rolling my eyes at it, basically.
I, for what it's worth, I kind of enjoyed the story for the most part, like the actual story, the bare bones of the story, but then, you know, throwing all that philosophy and stuff like that at
yeah.
me, it's like,
when I say story, I'm on philosophy, yeah.
It's a bit eye-rolly, but it's like, I get what they're going with for it, but it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is all right for what it is. It bounced off me, is all I'm really saying.
Gotcha.
I love the puzzles, but the philosophy bounced off me. What's up?
Did you finish it?
I have not yet. I just unlocked World C. I need to get back to it.
Oh, no. No worries. I was just curious. But yeah. Joseph, if you imagine Portal and Laser Chess had a baby, okay. You're like 90% of the way there.
Yeah, I'm looking at like screenshots from it. It has a very Portal vibe to it.
Yeah.
So... I was literally just thinking the other day, like, man, I want to play the Portal games again. And lo and behold, yeah, they're on Switch now.
Maybe I should do that. Portal mod that's very highly regarded came out very recently. Portal Revolution.
Really? Huh.
If you're craving for more Portal, may I recommend a game? Let me check my notes here. It's called The Talos Principle.
Okay, I get it.
It goes on sale pretty often, and there's a Switch version of it. It's what I played. I played the Switch version. Okay, and it comes with the DLC, Road to Gahanna.
Nice. I'll put that in my my wish list for sure.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well then, Bradford. Speaking of you, let's hear your number three.
Okay. So my number three is going to be controversial, and you'll see why in about 2 seconds. And I would just want to say, I think we'll put a pin in it and we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
My number three is Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
Hoo boyski. Okay.
So I'm expecting it to show up on one or more of somebody else's lists. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're correct.
Spoiler alert. So we're just gonna. Well, I'm gonna just put a pin in Tears of the Kingdom, and just know that I really enjoyed it. But there were two games that I enjoyed more than Tears of the Kingdom this year.
Well, for a little teaser, like, give us a couple of your thoughts on Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh my goodness. So Breath of the Wild, of course, is amazing.
Right.
Just an incredible triumph of a game. As somebody who grew up loving Zelda, seeing them take this whole concept and sort of turn it on its head and deal with sort of the big trend for open world games. What they did is, you know, taking an open world game and just sort of using the Zelda 1 mythos of mystery and saying yes to the player whenever possible. It was a great game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of those games where you wish you could just like erase your memory and play it again.
Oh God. Yeah.
And going into Tears of the Kingdom, you kind of think to yourself, it's like, there's no possible way that they can improve upon this, right? Well, they did. They did it. There's a lot more going on here. It just keeps saying yes to the player. It's basically got like Garry's Mod built into it. It's got a whole other system that I want to talk about. I don't know if I should talk about it right now.
Yeah, we'll come back around to it. It's okay.
There's one thing that I think it does absolutely brilliantly that fixes one of my major complaints with Breath of the Wild, I guess. I'll just leave it at that for right now.
Okay. Tease us a little bit.
But man, it's such a technically impressive game because the Switch is basically a cell phone from like 6 years ago.
Right?
And the fact that they got this thing to run on the Switch as well as it runs is like mind boggling.
Or thinking about it from the other direction, like the thing that I'm amazed by is how much game there is on still this tiny little cartridge that goes into what's essentially a giant iPhone.
It's ridiculous, right?
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. I know there are bigger game worlds out there, but, like, it's ridiculous.
Like, Nobel Prize candidate for quantum mechanics kind of amazing. Like, how did they do this?
Right.
You know? Maybe not that far, but you get the idea.
Yes.
I get it.
All right. And with that, we'll put a pin in it because I think we're going to talk about Tears of the Kingdom more in a bit.
We definitely will. So I guess it's my number three now.
Yes.
Now, here's a bit of a curveball because my number three is a four-way tie.
Good Lord.
So Super Mario Wonder came out this year. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later.
Okay.
But it also inspired me to go back and play through the entire original Super Mario Brothers trilogy and the lost levels.
Oh God, did you? I okay.
Yes, yes, I did.
I want to talk about that.
I mean, I did not finish the lost levels.
Okay.
I got to the point where I said, okay, I get it, I'm done with this, and then I started playing what's affectionately known as Super Mario USA.
Gotcha. Doki Doki Panic.
Doki Doki Panic, yeah. And I'm a 37-year-old man. I have been playing these games since I was 4 years old. These are like the pinnacle, like the top of the mountain of like video game comfort food for me. And like, it's pure muscle memory for me at this point, but it feels so good to flex those muscles again. Mm. You know, when you experience something from your childhood and you just go, oh yeah, this is as good as I remember. Like, that's Mario for me. Like, Mario 1, 2, 3, the music, the sounds, the characters, I can't help myself.
Hell yeah.
Even in the lost levels, which, you know, nowadays isn't quite as impossible as it used to be because the Switch Online has a rewind feature, which, yes, I used. Go fuck yourselves if you don't. I'm fine with that. And it helped me get through, see more of the lost levels than I've ever seen before. Until I finally said, I don't think I need to finish this game.
I have seen enough. I realize that this is a shitpost by the Mario devs. Okay.
Exactly. I've seen enough. I appreciate it. Let's move on.
Yes.
But I think what I found myself loving the most is, over time, I've realized, like, I just plain love the music of Nintendo games. And especially the music from Super Mario Bros. 2 and 3. Where Super Mario Bros. 2 has just this kind of constant waltz playing, and it's just absolutely enchanting. I can listen to it all day long.
Yes. I was humming something from Mario 2 earlier today, and my daughter was like, are you humming Potatoes and Molasses? I'm like, no. I'm humming something from Mario 2. And then we pulled it up on YouTube, and we had a grand old time. That's the one.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes.
I mean, there's just not enough good things I can say about the original Mario games. Like, to the point where, like, what do I even say at this point? It's Mario. If you don't love it, get out of here.
If you don't love it, go fuck yourself.
You know, there's only so many things that I truly believe that about. And I guess, yeah, the original Mario games are one of them. If you don't love these, go fuck yourself. It's like Super Mario Brothers, The Wizard of Oz, and Charlie Brown Christmas.
Solid.
You know what?
Solid. That's it list. For me. Yes. I love that. Thank you. How did one... So, I guess you said it's a four-way tie. That would be original Mario Brothers 2, 3, US 2. Three, yeah. and Wonder, then?
No, Lost Levels.
Oh,
including Lost Levels in this.
So, okay. Maybe it's a spoiler for later in the list. How did you feel Wonder stacked up against those?
I mean, it's every bit as good, and we will talk about that later.
Okay. All right. Spoilers, then. Sorry. Yeah. I feel like I'm ruining your entire list here.
Oh, I have plenty of more surprises in, you know, waiting in the wings. Don't we worry.
I love it. Okay.
All right, friends. Well, that about wraps it up for this first half of our two-part video game episode to kick off our 10th season of this podcast. Come on back next week, where we will finish up our list of games, and we'll also open the floor to you, the listener, to tell us what your favorite game of 2023 was. If you'd like to jump in and let us know, you can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Tell us what you think. Or if you'd like to send us a short little MP3 telling us about your favorite game, we'll put it in the show. You can email that at xmascreeps@gmail.com. You can also find us on all the socials. We're at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Blue Sky, at Christmas Creeps on all the socials. What else do I need to say? Oh, yeah. If you enjoy this show, please consider not only telling a friend, but also leaving us a star rating and a review on your podcatcher of choice. That lets people know that this is a show that people enjoy listening to. And as this is our 10th episode, we would really love the boost. So if you want to show us some love, that's how you can do it. Last thing I want to say is, if you want to join us on our Discord channel, the link to that is in our show notes. Please consider joining our Discord, where, you know, Brad talks about food. We talk about video games, TV shows that we're watching, weird internet stuff, all kinds of fun shenanigans. So go check out our show notes, go find the Discord link, and come stop by and say hello. Until next time, friends, I've been Joseph Wade for Christmas Creeps, wishing you a happy 2024, and we'll see you next time.
Happy Christmas!